The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Well, we have a lot of great guests on this show, but rarely do we have one, I think, that has the breadth of knowledge and experience as our next guest. We are fortunate today to have Mr. Rick Newman with us. He writes for Yahoo Finance. He's a Yahoo Finance columnist. He's the author of four books, including Liberty for All and Rebounders. And in a previous life, he won the Gerald R. Ford Prize for Distinguished Reporting on National Defense. So today we're going to start off talking about Apple, but we're going to move on from there in just a few moments. But good morning, Rick.
Hi, guys.
Thanks for being with us. All right. First thing we wanted to talk to you about, because when Peggy was reading about this yesterday, she said, I got to get him on. Apple Computer has been, it's a pretty big tax bill, $14.5 billion. But from what I understand, it could actually come back and haunt you and me. How does that work?
Well, if Apple does end up paying this $14.5 billion to the Irish government, and that's not clear because this ruling by the European Commission is going to be appealed by both Ireland and Apple. But if it goes to the courts and the courts say, yes, we uphold the ruling, Apple will, let's say they pay $14.5 billion. U.S. tax law says that companies can claim, U.S. companies operating abroad can claim a credit on their U.S. taxes for taxes they pay abroad. So basically that means they would be able to write down their U.S. tax bill at some point by the same amount they pay overseas. So that's $14.5 billion less they would pay in the United States at some point. And that's money that just would not go to the Treasury. So when the Treasury comes up short, they can either cut spending, which doesn't happen in real time. They can either find the money someplace else, which doesn't happen in real time. Or they can borrow, which does happen. That is how they paper over this kind of stuff. And borrowing, of course, is nothing more than a future obligation placed on the shoulders of U.S. taxpayers.
So, all right, so we could end up actually paying for it in a roundabout way because we won't collect it. Do you think that this will or could possibly lead to a change in our attitude about corporate taxes and money that companies are holding overseas and not bringing back into the United States?
I think our attitudes toward this have already changed, there actually is something close to bipartisan agreement in principle. I mean, this is one of very few issues on which Republicans and Democrats actually agree in principle, that the U.S. tax code is messed up, particularly with regard to corporations, because many other developed countries have been lowering their tax rates in recent years, which has left the U.S. with the tax rate at 35% just for federal corporate income, with just about the highest tax rate anywhere. It used to be Japan, but Japan lowered its tax rate, and I think the United States literally is now the highest tax developed nation in the world. So that creates all kinds of weird incentives for companies to put their income someplace else. And that's part of what Apple's doing. Many big companies, in fact, arguably just about all multinational companies do this to some extent. They shift income around. And it also creates an incentive for companies to keep profits overseas instead of bringing them back to the United States. So there's general agreement that this is a mess and it needs to be fixed. As with everything in Washington, when you get into the details, it seems a lot harder to do. This is one thing to watch for once the U.S. elections are over this year, because of this general agreement. We need to do something about this. The whole question is what?
Well, they seem to talk all the time about needing to do something about taxes. You know, they talk ad nauseum about income taxes, for instance, and all they did was just go back up again. It seems to me like Washington wants to find a way to raise taxes rather than to reduce them. Is there a way they can kind of arrive at some consensus here on this?
So when you talk about personal income taxes, there is no agreement in principle on what to do about personal income taxes. In general, Republicans want to cut them and Democrats want to raise them on the highest earners, and we've seen that in spades in the tax proposals from Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. I mean, there is almost no common ground between them on personal income taxes. So the whole question is this idea of tax reform. Do you somehow try to do tax reform that relates to every part of the tax code, or can you carve off corporate tax reform where there's more agreement? And that's what I think people would, most people who pay attention to this would like to see. Personal income tax just seems like it's going to be a huge battle. It'll probably go nowhere. But if you just say we're not going to worry about personal income tax right now, we're going to tackle the corporate side of it, we might be able to get something done. And the idea, I think, is not to, at the end of the day, on net, either raise or lower corporate income taxes. It is to equalize our system so that it looks more like the systems elsewhere and creates less of this perverse incentive to move money out of the United States, and also for some companies to actually move their headquarters out of the United States. We've seen that happening as well.
Right.
That's obviously not good, especially when you see companies actually continue to operate in the United States. It's not like they're leaving the country. They're just making what is sort of a paperwork change in order to take advantage of lower income taxes elsewhere. And that's obviously just a perverse incentive that distorts what we need to be happening in the U.S. economy, which is companies actually investing in the real economy, you know, factories, operations here in the United States, instead of this, you know, engineering where they're just shifting money around.
How do those of you at Yahoo Finance look at our economy now? Are we in good shape? Is the porridge warm?
Well, it completely depends on whom you ask. And, you know, we have two economies in the United States. You could argue we actually have many economies in the United States. In the aggregate, the economy is doing pretty well. I mean, job growth has been very strong for the last 3 years. Unemployment is almost as low as it can go in terms of, at least in terms of the way we measure it today. The housing market has clearly recovered. So for people who have the right education and are in the right parts of the country where there are good companies that are connected to the global economy and to the digital economy, I think those are two key things, they're doing fine. But too many Americans are not connected, or let's even say they're disconnected from the global economy and from the digital economy, and they're not doing fine. And there's data that supports that, too. So what we need in the U.S. economy is we need better ways to help the people getting left behind by these very, very powerful trends and forces we're seeing, globalization and digitization. There are too many people who have just not, they're just not partaking in that part of the economy where they don't have the right skills, they're in the wrong part of the country, a combination of various things. But the way we make the economy grow faster, I think, right, the number one thing is figuring out how to do a better job of getting those people back into the prosperous economy.
Okay. What do you think of the stock market? Do you think it's too high? Do you think it's vulnerable?
We debate this almost every hour of every day at Yahoo Finance.
I would think
so.
And
nobody knows. The first answer is nobody knows. We have people, we have so-called experts on all the time who say the stock market's going higher or the stock market's due for correction. You know, we've got equally smart people saying completely contradictory things. But a way to think about it is this. Stocks have had a great run since 2009. There have obviously been some dips along the way, but this is a very long bull market. And it's not entirely clear that this market reflects the real economy. In other words, the stock market may have gotten ahead of the real economy. We will have a recession at some point, not too far away, and you should probably enjoy the gains you've had in the stock market for the last several years if you've been lucky enough to be in, and be careful about what's coming.
Yeah, I would agree. It looks to me like we're entering, I mean, it's of course, August has been amazingly modest, but it looks to me like we're entering a period in which returns are likely to be very, very modest and not much to be had. Certainly not the type of gains we've had in the past. Anyway,
yeah,
folks, stay with
us.
It's
almost been too quiet.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, the traders will tell you that for August, that's for sure. Folks, stay with us. We've got a great show today for you. You're listening to Straight Talk Money, where we bring you the Wisdom of Wall Street each and every day. Back in a minute.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We're having a great show today. We've got Mr. Rick Newman with us. Rick is a Yahoo Finance columnist and author of four books, which we'll be talking about in just a few moments, including Liberty for All and Rebounders. And he's the winner of the Gerald R. Ford Prize for Distinguished Reporting on National Defense. And so, but we have a caller that has a question.
We do. Let's go to AJ in Houston. AJ, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
I have a question, and maybe Mike and the guests can comment on it. You know, I heard the conversation about high income taxes, corporate income tax, plus the back and forth that we're having on repatriation of foreign earnings. So I was thinking that why not just all together abolish corporate income tax and replace it with maybe a sales tax on revenue, 1% or whatever you can come up with on whatever your sales are in the U.S. And the way it will work is if your accounts are audited, somewhere you have it in the footnote that the U.S. sales are this much. And I got to, can of course, define what U.S. sales mean and pay tax 1% of that. It will be very simple. It will generate a lot more revenue, I think, because any company has to have revenue, and then you're paying tax on it rather than on the income. It will make the process or the income tax very simple and save the company a lot of money, and maybe the revenue will generate. I just wanted your thought. I mean, you can call it whatever you want to call it, sales tax or whatever it is, but get rid of all of that and replace it with something very simple.
Okay. Rick, do you have a thought or comment?
Yes, I think the reason something like that is extremely unlikely to happen is that Washington is where good ideas go to die. And what happens with any kind of reform? There's no shortage of good ideas in Washington. But when you start trying to turn this into laws, what happens is every single interest group that benefits from some little carve out or loophole mobilizes their all their assets. They crank up the campaign donations. They buttonhole their favored member of Congress, and you end up with a situation in which there's somebody who benefits from every single one of those loopholes that has made the U.S. tax code so complex. And everybody musters their troops to defend. You know, we want to do away with all those other loopholes except for the one that benefits us. And when you put it all together, you've got interest groups at war with each other, and the easiest thing in Washington is that nothing gets done. I mean, there are a lot of, you know, the idea of a tax on revenue, another one is to tax shareholder benefits, so you're sort of taxing at the investor level rather than the income level. There's also the idea of a value-added tax, a consumption tax, so that you would tax spending but not tax income. All these things make sense in their way. They're very logical. And they'd probably be more efficient and better, but it's just incredibly difficult to get anything like this done in Washington.
So I love the thing, and AJ. I guess you, in other words, you have a great idea, AJ, because apparently that's where good ideas go to die. So yeah, I would love for them to simplify the tax code, even and the personal tax code in particular. It costs a small fortune to get your tax return done. Is AJ still on the line?
Yes.
AJ, did we answer your question sufficiently, sir?
Yes, I think you did. we probably need somebody who is going to take it to the next level in Washington, but I don't know who that person will be.
I don't know.
Yeah, none of us do.
AJ, we'll get you to run for president the next time because we're kind of having a rough time on that one this year.
Maybe I can be on the if you know one of the presidential candidates, get me to them and I'll pass on the idea to them.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, we'll see. Thank you for calling,
thank
sir.
You.
We appreciate it.
Thank
All
you.
Right,
thank you.
Rick, let's move on to interest rates. Janet Yellen seems to, you know, the Fed. You used to not hear from the Fed at all when you started writing years ago. You've been in the business a long time. It used to be a surprise what they were going to do. Now they seem to box themselves in the corner.
Yeah, and then during the Alan Greenspan era, you'd hear from Alan Greenspan all the time. You just had no idea what he was talking about.
Well, he also kind of shot. I remember there was that time period he just raised it, bam, 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 bam. Now it has Janet Yellen and the company kind of boxed themselves in the corner because it seems to me like they're telegraphing one thing, but it doesn't always take place, and it's kind of much ado about nothing.
Yeah, after her speech. speech, her big speech that generated so much fanfare in Jackson Hole last week, we decided that what the Fed is doing, their strategy seems to be talk like a hawk, but act like a dove. And that, so we're getting this, yes, we're going to raise interest, trust us, we understand, we're going to raise interest rates. And sometimes you even seem to have a majority of the members of the voting commission, the FOMC, saying, yeah, trust us, we're on it, we recognize we have to do this. And then meeting after meeting, they keep not raising interest rates. In the Fed's, so yes, they are confusing the market. And the markets have probably gotten too complacent, because if something unexpected were to happen, it could force rates to go up sooner than people think. But, you know, in defense of the Fed, we have a really weird situation in the U.S. economy and the economy all around the world, which is it's growing much more slowly, even though we're in an expanding business cycle. It's growing much more slowly than we've been accustomed to since the end of World War II. So we're sort of in uncharted territory here. And the rest of the world economy is doing even worse. Plus, you've got negative interest rates in Europe and in other places, Japan, for example. So as the Fed raises, there's going to be this very strange divergence in which the most important central bank in the world here in the United States is tightening, while most of the rest of the world is loosening. And we just don't know what that might generate. So at the end of the day, you know, in 10 years when we look back, my guess is that this very slow pace of tightening the Fed has barely begun will probably look like it was the right way out, but you just don't know. The smartest people in the world have been wrong before, and they could be again.
Yeah, that's true. And but it just doesn't seem like we're going anywhere on any front. And you look at Japan, and they've had zero interest rates for over two decades. Do you think that's a possibility for us?
I think the U.S. Fed is intensely aware of the stagnation problem in Japan and extremely eager to avoid that. And I think there are reasons to think we will avoid that. You could argue we already have. I mean, our economy is growing slowly, but it is growing. We have demographics are much more in our favor than in Japan, where there's the workforce is much older than it is here. There's one other thing you could think worth thinking about here is we actually need immigrants in the United States, because that helps keep our population relatively young, and it expands our workforce, which is part of how you expand the economy. That's not a popular thing to say in some places right now, but it worked for the United States in the past. It's one of the things we should think about in the future. And we also need to get Congress more involved. I mean, fiscal policy used to be a really important part of how the government sort of approached the economy. And we have had almost no fiscal policy during the last 5 years. It's all Fed all the time. They're the only ones on the case, and they've done pretty well.
All right, Rick, I've got only 30 seconds. I want you to tell them about your books.
Oh, I've got two books to talk a lot about. How to survive and even prosper in the difficult economy we've got. You can find them at my website, which is rickjnewman.com, as well as links to some of my stuff that I do on Yahoo there.
All right.
Great. Thank you.
We will produce it. We'll give you that information on this side of the break, folks. Thank you, Rick, for being with us. Appreciate it very much. Thank you.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Okay, well, Rick was a great guest. Thank you.
My pleasure. I discovered him when he wrote for U.S. World and News Report, and he was terrific then, and I've seen his stuff for many years. So anyway, his website, folks, is rickjnewman.com, and you can go there and find out all kinds of information.
And Newman is N-E-W-M-M-A-N. There are a couple ways to spell that. So N-E-W-M-A-N. He's got four books: Liberty for All, A Manifesto for Reclaiming the Financial Reclaiming Financial Political Freedom; Rebounders: How Winners Pivot from the Setback to Success. Those are the two most recent ones. Then he's got one that I'm going to go get. It's in paperback. I want to make sure I get this one. Bury Us Upside Down, The Misty Pilots and the Secret Battle for the Ho Chi Minh Trail. And then Firefight, Inside the Battle to Save the Pentagon on 9/11. So all of those are excellent books. Encourage you to go get those. and they're probably at his website, I think, as he said.
Mm-hmm.
I really would. I'd encourage you to go get those.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.